It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy's here. Alex is here. Jason is here. We're going to talk about some interesting stuff. There are rumors. We'll have the usual rumor report. We'll also talk about a reorg at Apple. How long will your new Mac be supported? The answer may surprise you. And shocking news. Apple TV's messy introduction was hit with audio problems. But Jason calls it, it's a stupid story that you get stupider as you go. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. This show is brought to you by Cisco Meraki. Without a cloud-managed network, businesses inevitably fall behind. Experience the ease and efficiency of Meraki's single platform to elevate the place where your employees and customers come together. Cisco Meraki maximizes uptime and minimizes loss to digitally transform your organization. Meraki's intuitive interface, increased connectivity, and multi-site management keep your organization operating seamlessly and securely wherever you're team is. Let Cisco Meraki's 24/7 available support help your organization's remote, on-site, and hybrid teams always do their best work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 878, recorded Tuesday, July 18th, 2023. Chided. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring, you're currently dealing with a crazy economy, which adds to your challenges. Thankfully, there's a hiring partner who's focused on you and your needs. ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by ACI Learning. IT skills are outdated in about 18 months. Launch or advance your career today with quality, affordable, entertaining training. Individuals, use the code TWIT30 for 30% off a standard or premium individual IT pro membership at go.acilearning.com/TWIT. And by HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients, and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. Go to HelloFresh.com/MacBreak50 and use the code MacBreak50 for 50% off plus free shipping. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And on the news beat this week, the usual suspects. Hello, Jason Snell from sixcolors.com. Good to see you.
I walk the beat every day. Checking in. Hey, Mrs. McIntosh, how are things going on? How's young Newton doing in school? And then I move down the street and out in front of the bar. I'm like, oh, here's iPhone and iPad. What are you guys up to?
When I was a kid, there was a TV show called The Whistling Policeman, and he had a baton which he'd twirl, which is actually, in hindsight, a little threatening. And he'd whistle, and he'd go around do that exact thing. He'd cover his beat.
That's right.
Why do they call it a beat? Is he beating his feet on the street? Maybe that's it. Andy Inoko probably knows. He's a wordsmith and appears regularly on WGBH in Boston. Hello, wordsmith.
Thank you very much. I haven't keeping up my guild dues.
Are you in the WGA?
No, I am not.
I am SAG-AFTRA, and so I'm leaving right now. No, because I think first of all, I'm on abeyance because it was for the radio show. And as soon as I retired from the radio show, I said, I don't want to pay dues anymore. It's like $300 a year. And I said, can I just be on abeyance? And they said, yes. So maybe I don't have to strike. And secondly, we're not a signatory, so I wouldn't be striking. I'd be striking myself.
Yeah, right. I mean, just to be safe, like Jeff, like you should probably just do this like as Jeff Myers, not as your Leo Laporte character.
Oh, hi.
Like when Calvert DeForest like had to stop being Larry Bud Melman when Letterman went to CBS.
That's hysterical because they owned Larry Bud Melman.
Right.
Holy cow. I didn't know that. That's interesting. Also with us, Alex Lindsay. He's a video smith.
Hello.
090.media is his day job. Well, I shouldn't even say that. He spends some time there, but most of the time he's at officehours.global.
It's still my day job. It's still his day job. It's still a solid full-time job on top of the other full-time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He's got two. That's the key.
Yeah.
Was this an error? Just as we came on the air, I was told that Big Sur was updated in a release candidate. What? I don't understand.
That would be a security update if it's anything. Yeah.
So public betas are out now. They came out, in fact, I think as we ended the show last week, and I put it on my, I foolishly put it on my iPhone, iOS 17. It's a few things don't work, but it's not bad.
I have written many paragraphs over the years warning people in various ways about not installing betas on their main systems because they might regret it later. And I'm kind of over it now. Apple certifies this as a public beta, right? So Apple is like, yep, go to it if you want. And so, you know, all I've reduced it to is check to see if the thing that you depend on for your livelihood, make sure that still runs. Beyond that, if you want to get the stuff early and you're willing to deal with a few bugs, go for it. Have fun. Apple says it's okay, basically.
A few of my widgets went blank and then I re-added them and they came back. And just a few little weird things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. It's a good thing. Also, iPad OS 17. I should do that because I have a couple iPads. And now Sonoma is out in its public beta as of July 12th. Same thing, same rule, I guess so. Yeah. All right.
It's the developer builds you want to stay the hell away from.
Right.
But yeah, the fact that Apple of all companies is saying this is a public beta, we want everybody to see this. It means that they really do want to get the value of as many people as possible trying it. But although what Jason says is absolutely true, like at least wait a few days to find out, like to read the news to find out, oh, well, it turns out that it works. The only apps that don't work with it are the kinds that take keyboard input. Other than that, it's solid. And so if you've got projects that involve keyboard input, you might want to stay away from this one.
That's a hypothetical, right? Keyboard problem, just so you know.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
It's a hypothetical.
And what's great is ever since Apple, it has definitely been much more stable since Apple has made these public betas. It's been now quite a few years, but it used to be not that way. And then everyone was a beta tester when they first got it. So you're a beta tester now, or you're a beta tester after release. I think from a production perspective, I've gone back to thinking that the production release, like where I'll put it on my computer, is somewhere in January.
You're actually doing work. I'm just sitting around looking at my phone.
But I think that for my home computers, I haven't dived into the beta too much, but we have seen people. I guess there's a lot in the camera, like camera effects that are just built into Sonoma that have surprised a couple folks in virtual meetings, because you do a gesture and suddenly all this stuff happens, and it's not based on like a Zoom camera. It is in the actual Apple camera, and it doesn't appear to be limited to the camera that's like on your laptop. It's like it's managing the web cameras.
Yeah, so I'm using the Opal camera, so not a camera that is from Apple. But what Apple is doing in Sonoma, and by the way, there's Mac Rumors has a really nice post in their forums that is it's like a wiki post where people are putting in what's broken and what's not. Most things are not broken. But anyway, so it patches into your camera. So it says, oh, yeah, this is your camera. But what it actually is like your camera passed through Apple's software layer and then back out to the third party apps. So it can modify it, including doing all of those reactions. So, you know, theoretically, if you do a third party reaction, you're going to get it. And this is a third party camera doing it. And it does it anyway. That also means your third-party cameras will get the studio light effect, will get the portrait effect, like all that stuff, because Apple is taking it in through its video pipeline, analyzing your video, finding like subject detection and all of that, doing layered 3D effects behind, and they're able to do all of that stuff dynamically. So that's a thing that we can do now. It's pretty amazing.
Here's the Mac Rumors forum. If you go to the forums, go to iOS 17, you'll see these wiki posts, and you can go to, for instance, iOS 17. All the little things. That's really a nice feature. I like that.
Yeah, and if you find something that's broken, so they've got the supported, unsupported apps post on Mac Rumors for Mac OS 14.
Oh, okay. That's a good one,
and
too.
And that's the post that will tell you before will the mission critical thing that I absolutely need to have, or I will lose my job, is it there? or is it not there? And so it's just, it's good. Like if you rely on Audio Hijack or you rely on Crossover or something like that, you know, you might have some issues, but most people won't.
Yeah, very nice. So this is the article, and I thought it, a little odd, but I had checked the date, in, and it is July 18th, 2023. Apple issues release candidates for iOS 15.7.8, iPadOS, macOS, Big Sur, and Monterey. So you think these are like, why would they, they're bigger than just like the rapid update security responses.
Yeah, but they are, so Apple is committed, there's actually a really good article.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. Yes.
Oh yeah, about the idea of like how long is a Mac on the OS update train? How long does that last? And when will the last Intel Macs fall off of it?
Andrew
and
Cunningham.
Apple's policy is basically a couple, it's an R story, right? That's right. So basically the idea here is that you're on the train for a while, and then you fall off of it. And what happens is you don't fall into the wheels and die. What happens is your Mac on its old OS that it can't update from is still updated for a couple of years for not features, but for like security fixes and maybe compatibility fixes. So they keep a longer stretch. So if you're two back on, so Big Sur is a good example where Big Sur is getting closer to the end, but it's not at the end yet. So they'll do, ultimately, you know, you'll take Big Sur and Ventura, and Big Sur is one back now, about to be two back, right? And then, so you get your moment.
I think is Monterey in between? So it's,
yeah, it is, right. All right, so Big Sur is basically, this is fixing to die, pining for the Fjords release of Big Sur. But, it means that if you're running a Mac that can only run as far as Big Sur, that's kind of way back, and you still are protected. But once we ship, you know, we get our Sonoma in the fall, Big Sur then goes into the parked permanently category, but you'll still have Monterey and Ventura. So it's a nice feature that, I mean, as somebody who occasionally buys these Google Pixel phones, and then like the next year they're like, not for you.
Right.
Like, oh, but Google, you made it. Apple tries to stretch it out, but it does vary, as the Andrew Cunningham story pointed out, that sometimes you can really luck out and you're supported and on the main OS for a very long time, and other times not so much.
Actually, yeah, I was surprised that there isn't a set policy, because Google has now done that with both Android and encourages all Android developers to do some sort of commitment as to the number of years of updates. And Chromebooks are technically have, I think, 8 years. So if you buy a new Chromebook today, you're guaranteed 8 years from it. Well, and this is the thing, not from the day you buy it, but from the day of its release. So if you buy a 3-year-old Chromebook, that's going to give you 5 years. Windows is pretty, Microsoft's pretty clear about each version of the operating system, you know, 10 years to end of life. And then, but Apple is, and this is an interesting article. I was very interested. Andrew Cunningham's been maintaining a spreadsheet on how long each Mac is being supported. And it really does vary. The average Mac gets 6.6 years of Mac OS updates that add new features, another 2 years of security-only updates.
Right.
But that's not always the case, depending on the Mac. The shortest-lived Mac is the 2008 version of the white MacBook, which only got 2.7 years of Mac OS updates and another 3.3 years of security updates. So I guess you could say, well, we're pretty sure we're going to have 6 years, and we might have more. And then if you transition like from PowerPC to Intel or Intel to M1, that changes things a little bit too. So this, I would recap this article if I could, but it's kind of hard to see a trend here.
Yeah, it's a great article. Andrew does really, really good work over there at Ars about this.
Stuff. Yeah.
And this is a great example of him doing the math and following the updates. And I mean, I think what the Apple does have a policy, but their policy is, you know, when your Mac finally is not able to run an update, you've got essentially a couple more years before the security updates don't happen. It's not like your Mac stops working, but the security updates stop. And I just changed a server out that was running Mojave, right? So I was already off. I had fallen completely off at that point. It still worked. It was just increasingly difficult to work with it because all sorts of new features were launching. There are a bunch of features this fall that are coming to Notes and Reminders, where if you've got a device that's not on the latest, it basically says it's not going to see this note at all, right? It's like, it's gone. You can't see it anymore. So there's a lot of pressure that Apple's putting there. But the bottom line is you usually are going to get, you know, a 4 or 5 years where you're on the main line of updates, and then you'll get a couple of years grace where you know, you won't be on the latest and greatest, but you'll be safe and protected. And it's not bad. But I mean, the variance is if you buy a model that's been hanging out for a long time, the clock has been ticking while you haven't had that computer.
We also know because of things like OpenCore Legacy Patcher that you can often run older versions of the OS on a Mac, even though Apple doesn't support it. So I think this is the question. Is it planned obsolescence, or is there a real technical reason for this? Of course, we should say nobody expects a company to support anything indefinitely. There comes a time when you just don't want to devote resources to it. But it is a legit question if Apple's doing this prematurely.
I don't know. I think their track record is that they've been doing this. I'm always surprised. In the last couple of years, they had some big changes with Apple Silicon and with the 32-bit thing. But like, I'm usually very surprised at how many Macs, old Macs, are still supported when they do an update. they seem... It looks to me like they only migrate them off when there's a real technical reason when they have to dump them off, and not just because their clock expired. And you see that where when a raft of systems goes, you're like, oh, they're all like this. They all have this thing that they don't have, and they've decided to drop it. So I think that they try really hard to keep things on. And when they do dump something off and you can do a patch and get it running, generally it's because it's kind of janky, or it is a missing feature, and they've just decided they're going to say no. But I think they try to be aggressive. At least that's my impression, is that they try to keep Macs on the current version as long as they can.
Is there any reason they don't make a commitment of some kind, like as Google has with Chromebooks now? By the way, Google didn't for the longest time and had the same kind of weird update schedules. Can we get Apple to do that?
I think it's based, because it's not based on time. It's based on what feature set that they're building into it and whether they can
reasonably
support it. So it's just kind of like, well, we can't, you know, I think that's the.
Yeah.
And again, at some point, I think that they just have to say enough is, you know, like you can't keep on looking into the past. So I think that they do keep it going, because the current OS also works. So remember, it's not like it's a 4-year-old computer. Something that can run Big Sur is something that goes generally further back from Big Sur by years.
Right.
I think they're changing how they approach this too, because it used to be much more like new features come and everybody gets new features. And over the last few years, they have changed to a model where you've got an older Mac that you get the new update, but these three features don't work for you. And that's especially happened with Intel Macs, but it's not just Intel Macs. They do this thing where they're like, you know, you need, here's a new feature of Sonoma, but these Macs can't use that feature. You can use Sonoma, but not that feature. And it makes me wonder if their long game is to try to extend the compatibility window as long as they can, but
keep reminding you that life could be better.
Yeah, and rolling out new features that they're not going to support on those old systems. So your system is supported, but the new feature's not supported. Yeah.
Also, this is still a competitive market. That I know that the app market for Macs is separate from pretty much everything else, but every time that a computer is bricked, like every time a computer becomes useless to somebody and gets replaced, that is a window of opportunity for that customer to buy something else, or for them to have someone to talk them into buying something else. So it ever very much behooves them to make sure these things have as long a life as possible. And if Apple doesn't make explicit promises about how long they're going to be supporting their hardware, it's because they have a really great track record. I think all of us have that one, like, sort of mutant, like, off like a really, really old Mac that's still like it's in the kitchen because it looks nice and it's good enough to run a browser and to play YouTube videos, whereas Google, on most of their products, particularly Chromebooks, they really have to promise school systems that, hey, if you're going to be buying 500 of these Chromebooks, we promise that you will be still getting security updates until this date, and it's not going to be ended any earlier than that. So that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, and I mean, I got a 2012 right here, Mac Mini, still cooking away, you know, providing some web pages for me. And you know, and that's the thing, is that it doesn't really brick. It just means that it's not updated
anymore. Right. Meaning like it no longer does the thing that you need to get done on this because updates to APIs mean that you can't get the latest version of Ulysses or whatever word processor you're using. I mean, but yeah, I've got a 2011 like Intel Mac Mini on the other side of the office that as soon as I replace it with like an M2, I thought I'm not going to get the M1, I'm going to wait for the M2. And now I'm like, the M2 might be able to get a better one if we wait for the M3. But as soon as like I replace it, this 12-year-old or 13-year-old or 14-year-old at this rate Mac is going to still be like it's still going to be a server. It might become a dedicated Plex server because it's still pretty good. It's pretty nimble at what it does. I just can't use it for the thing that I do every single day.
I think actually one of the big challenges Apple's going to have is that the M1s and M2s have so few moving parts and they are so much more powerful than what most people buying them need. I'm just amazed at how much an M1 will do on its own, that the upgrade path for that could be very, very, very long.
Like Apple already learned that with the iPad in a similar situation, didn't they? People don't upgrade their iPads.
I'm getting ready to finally get my kids some new iPads, but they've had the first Pro one, which was 2015 or 2016, and they've been happily using that since it was released. And it has to do with, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that and this is where Apple, I think, could maybe improve things, is that the app developers are just not doing anything that pushes the hardware that hard. they're not getting to a point where they're reaching the hardware limit.
It makes me wonder if in the Apple Silicon era, we might see extended compatibility. If one of the reasons they're shifting to this, like you get it, but not all of it approach, is that maybe Apple Silicon Macs will stay on the latest version for a really long time.
Yeah.
But with some features as they come in that they're like, not this feature for you, but you get to stay on. And I would love that because what that means is that you're on the mainline security update flow and you're on the APIs that everybody expects, which means your software is not going to degrade and your iCloud stuff isn't going to partially break because some systems are, all that stuff stays the same. And it's just that, that whizzy new video effect isn't there. Yeah. And that I think that would be a much better approach. Like keep people on the main line without some of the features that don't work as well or that require a bit of hardware that wasn't in the M1 but is in the M2. I hope that's where they go with this so that like even 5-6 years out, they're still on the main line, even if they're missing some of the marquee features.
There is one area in which I think Apple could improve that. Again, they build the hardware so damn well that they have these machines that are 10, sometimes 15 years old that are still like I have an iMac that is 15 years old that I would love to find a use for. I'm running Chrome OS on it because it's the easiest thing to do with it. I wish that they took the extra effort to make it really, really easy to like locate old versions of operating systems and do clean installs on older Macs that predate that really cool. Just hold down a button and we'll be able to get you going via network. It's not true for everything. It used to be there was at least like an FTP site that, if you do the secret handshake, you could download and make an installer media for pretty much anything that has an Apple logo on it. Apple doesn't have to do that no more than like GM has to support a 1950s car, but it would be nice given that they do have machines that they don't look like they were made out of animal skins and twigs. They're still very modern and still capable. And so long as it runs a web browser pretty sprightly, it could be super, super useful in the kids' room or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew makes a point that you could always put, Chrome OS on an old Mac or Linux, but he also says it would be kind of nice if you could keep these things running Mac OS for a little bit longer, as you said, like as a server and things like that. Linux is, I mean, look, I guess if you wanted Linux, you should start with Linux. Yeah. And if you buy a Mac, you should assume, I'm buying a kind of a premium product that is going to be obsoleted in 6 to 8 years.
Yeah, except, I mean, I think we're overstating it. I really do. Like, I was running that Mojave server. I think the security is an issue. So, like, running something and actively using it and doing your email on it and browsing the web and all of that. But there are lots of other uses for these things that are on your local network. You're not actively using them. You're running them as a server. You're just writing documents and all of that. And they don't stop working. I mean, I could literally write articles. I couldn't browse the web.
Well, that's the point. The hardware
continues
forever. I could
write articles
forever.
On that iMac back
there.
Yeah, right? But at the same time, I mean, what broke most of these old computers back here is actually the introduction of mandatory SSL on every website because they don't support it. And so you need a proxy and it's too bad. But otherwise, like Word 4 runs great on that 512 that I've got back there. And Word 5 will run excellently. And I guess Word 6 never ran excellently, but it ran on that iMac G3 back there. Like they still work, but like you do give up the security
of the internet. You give up. You give up.
Well, in this case, it's like the exploits in your safety on little slightly more modern ones. It's your safety for a little while, but it's not like they aren't usable. And honestly, unless you're a target, it's probably not even an issue for your safety. And keep in mind, after you fall off the train, you've got a couple of years of security updates on top of that.
And we've seen this with Windows too. And then the browsers start to say, oh, well, we're not going to support this older version. So really, they're still usable as long as you air gap them from the internet.
That's kind of it. So, which is why server is a great use. And also, like
server
is
not a great use.
Or something
you mean like in-house only
access.
In-house
like only
or
server.
Like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, server would be a good use because you'll probably be able to do a homebrew update to Apache forever.
That's
right?
True.
It's just you wouldn't want to use that to go out browse piracy websites or something like that. You'd probably be in trouble then.
Actually, side note, I keep reading up on trying to keep current on the Hackintosh movement. And that's one of the greatest successes of Apple Silicon is that it made Hackintoshing a lot less necessary because, hey, now we've got the really super hot, fast wings. But one of the other things that it does, oddly enough, is you can Hackintosh a Macintosh to run like a later version of the operating system than what Apple supports. And that's definitely not for the faint of heart, but it's an interesting application of what shouldn't be an outdated technology.
Well, and that's also the open core legacy patcher, which is... You can't. I haven't played with it. I should probably, but I'm one of those guys who gets rid of the old stuff and just uses NumEx anyway.
It's fun.
Yeah.
it would be fun. But you can't patch it once you do that. OpenCore, can you? What is that? What does that mean now in terms of using that Mac? I can go online, obviously, but I should probably not take updates from Apple. Or is that not the case? I don't know.
I don't know.
Like some of them update as normal, and others, if Hackintosh experience is any indication, you would basically run the update and then repatch.
You have to rehack it.
You'd run the update and then attach that drive to another system and run the patch on it and then update. It depends on how bad it is. But I mean, here's a thought experiment that I haven't even considered, but I'm just going to throw it out there, which is when will an M1 MacBook Air fall off the update train completely? And, you know, putting this in perspective, I wonder if it's like in the 2030s, right? Or maybe late 2020s, but like, I don't know, like an M1 Mac,
I think it could go to 2030s.
That's the point, is that Apple may say, well, yeah, but people aren't upgrading. We're going to have to, obsolesce these, even though technically we don't have to.
Counter argument would be the iPhone, where Apple has shown great success in trade-in programs and in growing their install base by getting people to buy new systems, bringing old systems back or handing them down and increasing the total number of iPhones in use. And you could make that same argument for Macs and Apple Silicon Macs, is the people who want to buy a new Mac will do so. But if that M1 Mac is still viable, it can go to someone else. And now the Mac market is that much larger. Right. And I think they do want to do that to a certain extent. I don't think Apple's at the point now where they feel like they have to obsolete their computers because there's no growth potential.
Right.
Because remember, Apple's market share for the Mac is still so small that I think Apple really does believe they can pick up a lot of new users. And maybe one way you do that is by getting a refurbed M1 MacBook Air for $699 in the hands of people who were never going to buy a Mac otherwise.
Yeah. Jammer B, do we have old Intel Macs lying around, right? We use those. The thing running my Stream Deck is, and it's not on the internet. It's just sitting there. Do we have some that you can't update, like they're stuck on Snow Leopard or Big Sur? Yeah. And we don't put those on the internet. We just.
Well, they're internal to our system.
They're internal. Yeah. They're on our network. They're on the LAN, but they're not on the interweb.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good use for it. I got a little mini Stream Deck here attached to. It's an old Mac laptop, right? Because this is the problem in a company where we're pretty much a Mac company. There's a lot of old, Mac Minis and MacBooks lying around. We had a bunch of 2015 MacBooks. Boy, I really wanted to keep those running forever. What year is this one? 2013. I'm running myself right now, unbeknownst to me, a 2013 MacBook. What poor soul had to use that? Oh, look. Anybody want an old Mac Mini? See, I am at the point now where I don't even want to buy anything with Intel in it, even in a Windows PC anymore.
I got one of those.
Yeah, you got, well, if, you if, got if three of them?
If it's a
these are, by the way, you know how we use these? Set dressing.
Actually, if I had that many, well, that means- and or like if I was at the MIT flea market and someone had a box of them that I could make an offer for, I would use them as like shelving supports, like cinder blocks.
Oh yeah, that's a good
and
idea.
And use that to support like my servers and
that's
and
a great idea. There. Would you have it? You'd have it poured out, right? Look at those ports. That's when a computer
I'd probably alternate levels. Where
oh yeah,
ports out.
Ports yeah, in. Yeah, ports out, ports in, ports yeah. out, ports in. Look at that. Yeah, I just need all I need is a door, and I've got my workstation or a speaker stand. Look at that.
There you
just
go.
Like that. Yeah, perfect.
Oh God, you can hollow it out and use them as speaker enclosures.
Oh like, my
get
God,
really good drivers.
it hurts me a little bit. It's not just Apple; it's everybody that we make these devices that because they're solid state for the most part, they're just never going to wear out. And they're just going to end up in landfill. And it's beautifully machined aluminum, and it's beautifully.
I will say
made.
A lot of my stuff, I still use a lot.
Good.
Like, I mean, old stuff.
Good.
You know, I
good
don't
on
you.
It.
You know, like I have an old Apple TV that I have updated that I travel with. It's just one of my older Apple TVs, but it has all my. It works just fine. And you know, when I went to the shore a couple of weeks ago, I just literally plugged it into the system, and now I have. My system.
Yeah.
Like I don't have to, you know, like I don't have to deal with the Blu-rays or whatever that's at the shore, you know, at the rental house. And so the thing is
are
that
you, are you going to Jersey? When you say I'm going to the shore, Cape Cod?
A couple weeks ago, I went to Cape Cod. No, my family goes to Hatteras.
Oh, it is the shore. You're going down
we
the,
went. No, we went, we got
the
back.
Barrier we Island,
we
Barrier
didn't
Reefs.
Have a show. That's great. But
that's cool. So you all went to Hatteras. Look how this is yellowed compared to this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, white. That's not good.
White is hard. White is all, you know, white plastic is super hard to keep white. It just doesn't stay that way. Why you shouldn't buy things.
I think probably it's my face makeup that's getting on it, to be honest.
How old is that?
I don't know. What is this one's got like is burned on the bottom. I don't know where this was it.
Oh yeah.
Let's call that an Intel birthmark.
Is that the scorch Intel mark melanoma. From where the chip, the processor was? Holy
Probably.
Cow. This one's so old, has a VGA port on it. Oh, that's old. That is really old.
DVI.
Is that
the VGA is that or is that like DVI?
No, it's DVI. You're right, Andy said DVI. You're right. Yeah.
Even then, you need a dongle for VGA.
Thunderbolt.
Is it still the same vertical? I mean, not vertically, but is it still the same size?
Yeah, it's identical, which is hysterical.
So still stack.
Oh, not as the new one, stack. But as the old, as many of them. No, the new one isn't this shape. No.
The footprint is larger than the new ones. Yeah,
they're bigger. Yeah. They're, it's like a pancake. They flattened it a little bit.
Yeah.
They smooshed
it. Is that the pro?
This is the high end of the last Intel Mac Mini that I've got in my hand here, 2018. So still viable, other than, you know, I was keeping it on Mojave, but that's because I wanted to have a 32-bit compatible version, and I was stubborn. I couldn't just update it.
For your 32-bit
In 10 years, I'm going to boot it, and I'm going to be like, Mojave, what? It'll be here.
I love it. So this, we're going to put this one aside with a little Intel birthmark. I think that's a vintage. That is, this one, John has been very, you're good, John. It's Mac OS Lion running on this one. He's made a note of the OS and everything. We'll take a little break, come back with more. Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay, Jason Snell, a great panel. Talk about anything to do with Apple. That's what this show is all about. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Now, if you're a small business, your small business is all about the people that make it up. You know that by now. Anybody runs a business knows that the people are the whole thing, the whole Megilla. A good employee can take you to the moon. A bad one can drag you down. Add on to that, crazy economic ups and downs. And this is a challenge. Now more than ever, it's important to hire the right people faster and more efficiently to keep overall costs down. Plus, it's a competitive environment. We're all fighting for the same employee. Thankfully, there's a hiring partner who can really make a difference. They're focused on you and your needs, and that's ZipRecruiter. From pricing to technology, everything ZipRecruiter does is for you and what works best for you. And right now, you can try them free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. This is what we use when we need to hire. And ZipRecruiter does a bunch of stuff that really makes a difference. For instance, with ZipRecruiter, you can beat out the competition because when you make that first post on ZipRecruiter, they're going to look at your requirements, they're going to look at their million-plus current resumes, and they're going to do some matching, and they're going to send you the names of some candidates who fit your job requirements. Then you look at them and invite the ones you really like to apply for your job before those other guys can snag them. And that all happens almost instantly. It's amazing. Plus, the pricing is completely straightforward. No surprises, no hidden fees. You know what you're going to pay before you post the job so you can stick to your budget. You'll reach more qualified people because, of course, ZipRecruiter sends your job post to more than 100 job sites. I love ZipRecruiter, and we have had great results. You know, when you're down a person, it's always like, oh, we need to fill this job fast. Otherwise, we're all going to be working harder. ZipRecruiter gets us quality candidates fast. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter say they'll get a quality candidate within the first day. We get one within the first few hours every single time. Hire the best with the help of a partner that's all about you. ZipRecruiter. Our special web address will get you a chance to try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Make sure you use that so they know you saw it here. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thank you, ZipRecruiter. Thank you. Thank you very much. There were 4 of these Mac Minis stream sources. Oh, this was Streamasaurus. Yeah. So John has just posted a picture. And did Colleen build this originally? Yeah. It was in a little, I remember, it was in a little like a rolling TV stand or something like that. And you said it was in general?
Random.
All right, let me look at our Slack here. Yes, we still use Slack. I'm sorry. Oh, wow, look at this. This is probably the one that was burned. because we would feed a bunch of different sources, you know, Ustream and YouTube, and I can't even remember all the different places. YouTube was later.
Bitgravity.
I remember Bitgravity, yeah. There were at least 4. Justin TV before it was Twitch. And so each one of these would have a dedicated Mac that we would feed the video into. Colleen built all that, and they were sitting in like a, it was like a TV, one of those rolling TV things. Those were the days, in the early days of the show. 15 years ago? Yeah.
One nice thing about the really old ones, though, they're not account locked. Like, that's, it kind of stinks that, like,
oh, yeah,
you go on eBay trying to buy like secondhand equipment and say, oh, wow, M1 with 1 terabyte for only like starting bid $25. Oh, it's account locked. So it's for parts only. Like, oh, damn it.
And Burke says that wasn't a TV table. It was a server rack with wheels. Was it?
Manly.
Oh, this Mac Mini. The one in the picture is still working. This is number 4. Of the 3, I have 3 that are not working on my table. This is the one that's still in use. It controls our Blackmagic video hub. That thing that has, what is it, 98 in and 189 out? And it feeds an ancient. Oh, you just turned it off.
No, it's not locked.
It's not locked. It feeds an ancient. Look at the bezels on this iPad. It's a 30 pin, right? I don't know. I can't. It doesn't slide to unlock. I don't even know how that works. Oh, yeah, there it is. And that's the software that's running on that Mac Mini and feeds the iPad. So if I were right now to, like, Leo single, and if I were to tap that, and make it point out like outside, it would change it. Wow. This is a lot better than that TV stand with the four Macs in it. Wow, how old is this one that's running the Video Hub?
It was a set
of four. How come one is so burnt up? It must have been on the top shelf where all the heat was. Okay, that's why there's three here and one still in service. Moving along.
Buy free, get one free.
That's yeah.
Nice. What a deal.
Yeah.
Got a coupon.
We probably did get a quad pack. That was back in the day, Alex Lindsay, when Travis was managing the downtown Apple store, and we would go in there. I remember standing out on the corner with Scott Bourne out on Market and whatever that street was, and he had like seven. He had a dolly with like seven computer boxes stacked up, and I remember standing there. People would drive by, and go, "Hey, hey, would you just buy out the store?" Yeah. Apple has done something interesting, according to Mark Gurman. I don't know. I don't know enough about Apple to know. It's a shift away from Steve Jobs' approach. Steve had reorganized the company along functional lines, which is kind of an interesting thing to do. You had software engineering, you had hardware, you had machine learning design services, and then, according to Gurman, contributions from each group would then funnel into new features and products. So in other words, there wasn't a Mac group. There wasn't an iPod group. Steve did that in the late 90s. But Apple apparently is going back to the old, bad old days. Are they the bad old days? The Vision Pro headset, for instance, has its own now group, the Vision Group. And they're kind of responsible for the whole hardware thing. Is this meaningful? I don't know. Mike Rockwell, who's a longtime Apple guy, was running the technology development group since 2015, but it is now called the Vision Products Group.
Yeah, it's literally they just renamed it because it's the group that was building the headset all along. So I'm not sure how newsy this is. Also, the watch was done this way.
Yeah.
And even now, part of the watch development, the watch software development, is still under the group that developed the watch and not directly under Craig Federighi. I think it's overstating it to say, oh, they're going back to the old way, because right. That's not really what's happening here. It seems like they create a group to build a new product, and then over time, it seems to slowly kind of diffuse back out into the world. But they didn't set up an iPhone group or an iPad group or a Mac group. It's more like with the watch, like the software is still sort of in the watch group. The hardware has gone to their hardware group. And I imagine the Vision OS stuff will probably similarly slowly kind of spread out until it makes sense to hand it off. But they do seem...
Is it for secrecy that they partition off the? I mean, and they probably didn't want anybody to know what the Vision Group was doing back in 2015.
I'm sure it was partially for secrecy, but it's also just functionally. You can't not ship anything for 5 years, right? So you got to ship your iOS updates and your macOS updates and all of that in the meantime, plus have a bunch of people who are working with their heads down saying, you know, nobody's going to see this until 2024. You're just going to have to work on it. And so I think it serves both purposes, but it's almost like the Tim Cook era is sort of hacking. Like Jobs was like, we got to simplify this. And so he did. Tim Cook is sort of like, well, yeah, but now that we're launching this new platform, and I don't know how the iPhone was done. I imagine the iPhone was at least initially done very similarly, and the iPad for the watch, they're like, we're gonna have a group working on the watch, and then they will sort of like start to dissolve into the greatness of the big Apple soup, I guess, in the middle there. Apple soup sounds not very good.
No, there's some delicious apple soup,
and that's what's going with Vision OS too.
But it's made with apples, not Vision Pro headsets.
No,
that wouldn't make a very good soup.
Yuck. Yeah. Do not eat iPad. Do not eat it.
Gurman writes, if the Vision products were developed in standard Apple fashion, the software engineering for the headset would have been led by Craig Federighi and his software engineering organization. The hardware would have been developed alongside Apple's other devices under John Ternus. The content arm would be with Eddie Q's services. So, but it makes, you know, I think Tim Cook, you could safely say, is an operations genius. And if he thinks it's going to work better in a different way, do it that way. Steve, remember... that Steve went, you know, came back to, or actually before he left Apple, raised the pirate flag on a building down off in the corner of Infinity One Infinity, and developed the Macintosh completely separate from the rest of the company.
Yeah.
And well, so that might be his heritage more than it is the right way to do things.
Yeah. And of course, that was his sticking the thumb in the eye of the Lisa Group.
Right.
This was like, we're going to steal everything from every right. other project.
Right.
And that was like a model that kind of was sinking Apple, just as it was weighing down Microsoft and other companies. We have the heads of divisions that basically consider themselves as independent fiefdoms.
Right.
And scrambling to remove resources from other divisions because they feel like, hey, if this other division gets an extra $12 million, that $12 million could have been to me. I need to undermine their work as much as possible. And that's simply not the culture at Apple. So it's not alarming. It's interesting. One of the most famous things about Apple's management structure is that every week you have that weekly meeting of like all the division heads basically doing a state of the company on all the different product developments, and basically there's no one division holding on to all of their ideas. That at least at the very, very highest level, there is conversation between different parts of the company, so that if one decision made by engineers or made by a manager is going to impact another product or another thing or another schedule, that gets borne out really quickly and settled. So yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. It would be interesting if upcoming products took on this model. I don't think it will.
Gurman says that the self-driving car team is run this way too. They're kind of a standoff.
That's another product that has no schedule. It has no right. agenda. They don't know when it's going to be. Just like the VR headset was, the Apple Vision was going to be. We don't have a target for it. Even when we released it, it's not really the thing. It's the thing we're releasing because we need to release something. So maybe that's just the simplest way to get things, iterate really, really quickly and get done the things you need to get done without feeling as though, we had a conversation with Josh and he was saying he saw a really good sketch of a car with like an extra wheel on the back and we could make that a GPS. Like, yeah, that has nothing to do with anything we're working on. Sit down, shut up, go away.
Yeah. There's a fine, I mean, it's almost like a what's the sound of one hand clapping kind of thing, but like, what's the difference between going to Craig Federighi and saying, we're working on a thing. I need you to create a group of your best engineers to write the software for the thing, and they will work in secret, but technically they'll report to you, but a dotted line to me, but they'll report to you, and saying, we set up a group and got a bunch of engineers that are in the group, and Craig will check in with them because it's all based on iOS anyway. So of course, Craig is going to be involved. Like, I feel like this is the way Apple is structured. It's kind of a distinction without a difference. You need a dedicated team to work on a future product. It's going to be not distributed to everyone because they're going to want to keep it a secret. They're going to want to focus those people, but you also can't like the way Apple's assets are laid out. Like, it's all going to be based on iOS. If they need a framework change, the framework engineer is going to need to change it, right? They're all kind of working together, but there's going to be a subgroup that's working separately. Does it matter where they are on the org chart? I don't know.
I'm sure there are many management theories and books have been written about the best way to handle this. You nailed it, Andy, when you said it almost killed Microsoft that they had these fiefdoms. That's definitely what you don't want. So I'm sure there's some sort of, there's a lot of theory behind this, and I'm sure this is the state of the art.
And I don't think Apple's probably immune to internal disagreements about how to execute something.
but good leadership resolves that rather than letting, you know, the story of Microsoft was the Windows team wouldn't let Office come out on any other platform. I mean, there was all sorts of this, you know, shooting at each other, that famous cartoon of every division of Microsoft pointing a gun at the other division.
Well, and I think that there's an advantage to having a team that is, let's say, 85% contained from a security perspective, from a lack of, you know, bureaucracy perspective. But that last little bit, the danger is, again, that not only is it people competing with each other, but it's also just not knowing what the other ones are doing. When the Canon the Mark II came out, you know, it was 30 frames a second, not 29.97. And someone asked, like, why is it not 29.97? Why can't you do 29.97 on this camera? Well, the still camera division was not allowed to talk to the video camera division.
Right.
They didn't know anything about 29.97. They just knew, well, 30 frames a second seems good. And so those are the kind of things that you get when it gets too vertical. But I think that you can get into a ton of like, where is this engineer going to work today and who is he working for? And, you know, and things get slowed down because someone's get, you know, you're pulling a hand, shared resources in like six different directions sometimes.
I have a man, an autographed copy of Manu Cornett's famous org chart cartoon on my wall in my home. And you can see Microsoft, all these little groups pointing guns at each other. When he did this some years ago, Apple had a center, which the red hot center was Steve Jobs at the time, and everything, you know, everybody reported to Steve Jobs. That's not the case anymore either. No company can run that way either. So, yeah. All right. So I'll continue on with, as long as we're doing the Mark Gurman segment, I will continue on with the Power On newsletter. He says new Macs are going to be coming a little more detail. Remember, he was the one who said they're working on an iMac for 2025 that is bigger than 30 inches, but a little more detail on what Apple might be doing this year. He's guessing, I think. I don't know if he has a source on this, that there'll be Mac launches in October featuring, could feature, he says, the first Macs with M3 chips. Don't expect high-end MacBook Pros or desktops. Do expect, and I think this matches the cadence that they're on right now, perhaps an iMac, but certainly a 13-inch MacBook Air and a 13-inch MacBook Pro with an M3 chip. I made a note to myself the other day, you may not buy another Mac until it is an OLED MacBook Pro with an M3 processor. But that won't be this fall, I don't think.
I don't make myself those promises.
I have to do it. Otherwise, I'll go, oh, that's nice.
The heart wants what it wants.
I go, you will not buy
the heart wants what it wants.
Another Mac.
So it's really, the note is more like, Leo, don't buy another one. Because that's one of the big rumors. And I like that idea of, I had the 13 Air and a 15 Air as my current. And I'm thinking the 14, I look at Lisa's 14-inch MacBook Pro with envy in my eyes.
I just don't know how you live with one computer. See, that's the problem when you get the laptops. So when I do my presentation, I have this presentation I have to do a lot right now, and there's like four computers. I got one Mac Studio and three Mac Minis, and all of them are necessary.
How do you keep them in sync? Do you have a tool that keeps them all having the same documents, or is everyone unique?
So what I jump on Zoom with right now is my Mac Studio. So that's what I'm talking to someone in. But then I have one computer that's my Telestrator. So that does this part, right?
Oh, yeah.
That just does that. That
a little,
that little
fancier
drawing.
Operation than I do.
And then I have another one that does the power, does keynote. So it just does the presentation. So I can always cut to that, you know, so I can cut to the presentation. And then I have another one that runs any kind of app or web page that I want. And I'm looking at buying one more. So I have another app system. But what's nice about it now is when that all runs into like an ATEM Extreme, you just sit there and just cutting between them, drawing over top of them. I can split screen between them. I can, you know, do all those other things that it makes good presentation. but I couldn't do it. I kept on getting them because because a lot of things want to take over the whole screen. And so I was like, it's just better to just put them on a different computer so I don't have any of those things. But I will say that the Mac, lots of Mac Minis makes makes everything run really nice and smooth.
So what you're saying, Alex, is that in your digital world, your romantic relationship is a polycule.
What's a poly? Okay, you better. I don't know. I'm feeling ignorant.
In a polyamorous relationship, the people who are in that relationship, it's a newer term, are referred to as a polycule, where there could be different levels of emotional connection.
You might have a throuple. You might have a quintuple. You might have a sextuple. Okay.
I have a, yeah.
Don't, yeah, just stop right now.
I'm going to stop right now. I was going to keep going with that.
So long as it's creating a space of love and honesty.
It's a harem of Max, you know, like.
Harem. There you go.
Max.
I've got a harem.
Maybe not that.
It's not a polycule. It's a harem.
There you go.
You're only going to get yourself in deeper. That's all I can
say. I know.
I'm
going to stop now. I'm
just going to. Okay. Moving right along. Let's see. With the Gurman segment. We should get a little bumper or something. And now.
We Yeah, on Upgrade, we call this Rumor Roundup, and we got some art, and we named Mark Gurman the sheriff, and, you know, you
oh,
just got to go
good.
With it.
That's good.
He's the best in the biz. Get your own idea, Leo. You can't have the Rumor Roundup.
All right,
you,
yeah, okay, tune in the Rumor Roundup. Yeah, because I have mixed feelings, because rumors are not news. So I have mixed feelings, but I have to say, we're getting into August right now, and it's going to get harder and harder to put shows together. So rumors.
Well, and is it a... I mean, I always think it's, I call them reports instead of rumors. Honestly, I prefer that because Gurman is so well sourced and he's not
really
wrong.
Good.
Like,
yeah.
He's always
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And when he's wrong because it was true at the time and then they changed their mind, right? Like, it's his accuracy is as close to perfect as you can get. And so, you know, if you want to know what's happening next, I mean, yeah, we all do the Mark Gurman segment. We all do it because
yeah.
his sources are that good.
He's the one.
Yeah, it's him and with a little sprinkling of Ming Chi Kuo in there.
Yeah, there you go.
Supply chain.
Yeah.
That's what you got.
A little Ming Chi Kuo for spice. He says, Gurman does. I wouldn't expect any major upgrades on the iPad until the M3 iPad Pros with OLED screens, tasty, arrive next year. Do expect perhaps an iPad Air update. It's in development, he says. And I think that completes the roundup.
Basically, M3 is in the... I feel like the M3 in the fall thing is the one that I took away from his whole report. Is like,
that's
okay,
the one
we got
I'm excited about.
We got a timeline now.
I'm really... I think we've talked about this. The M2 was really kind of almost just a slight upgrade over the M1, kind of an incremental upgrade. But the M3 going to the 3-nanometer process, you could expect to see a bigger performance jump. We talked about this last week. Right? Or am I wrong? Or is that just...
Yeah, it's a die shrink, so it should actually be
be better.
Substantive yeah. improvement in yeah. power and power efficiency. Yeah, yeah, theoretically.
It'll also be in short supply because TSMC is cranking them out as fast as its little machines can. But they've already said that, you know, Apple's bought up the entire production.
Yeah.
Samsung Unpacked, we should mention, given, you know, there is no folding Apple phone yet. Google's got one. There are several companies making them, but the big one is a Samsung phone and the Samsung Flip. We expect they will announce new ones on the 26th at 4 a.m. Pacific time. Now, Andy, Samsung just sent me an invite. You could, if you're close enough to New York, you could go at 6 a.m. in New York, and they've got breakfast items.
I might be awake for that because I can take like the red eye train. There's like all kinds of 24-hour diners.
Sleep on the train, yeah.
Have a big breakfast, be nice and woozy by the time the event starts.
They say you will get to play with whatever they announce, which is expected to be the Galaxy Z Fold 5 and the Z Flip 5. And Gurman says fresh tablets, multiple smartwatches, potentially a new version of the Galaxy Buds. I think I'm going to buy a Flip 5. I really liked the Flip. That's the little one. It's like a pocket right. square that unfolds. I just happen to have in my pocket a pocket square. It's a pocket square that unfolds and becomes a phone. Have you seen the Apple... anti-Apple horror ad that Samsung put out? Did you see that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a reach.
It's like, if you see it, you gotta hide your eye. It's like the Ring or something, right? If once you see it, you will have to buy it. And so this is the short version. Let's see if I can find the actual. Yeah, this is somebody reporting on it. Let me see if I can actually find the It's a parody of like those movies where they're out at the campground.
YouTube, search for Samsung Galaxy. Join the flip side.
Join the flip side. And that was pretty cute. This is their
cute. Remember, Samsung has been the company that has always been like the attack dog against Apple. Like they're the ones who said, "Oh well, we have a headphone jack. Apple doesn't. That's why you're losers and we're winners. Just don't ask us about whether we're going to have a headphone jack on our phones next year." Just year after year after year like that.
So she's telling you can turn on the sound.
Any way to stop it? Mr. Switch.
Oh, I got some other audio going on, huh? Hold on, let me find the other audio. I don't know. I don't want to care. I don't really care. Forget it. I don't care. Oh, I'm running two different versions of the same commercial. Now you can do it. So she's now seen the flip phone, and she says, "Get out! Get out!" They're hiding their eyes. They're running away.
They're running across the beach.
What's going on? Something wrong?
It's a lakeside camp.
I just saw it. Oh no! Yeah, it's a, it's definitely like a. But I'm, you know what? It worked. Now I want one.
Did somebody run through and say, "Wait a second, in this ad, are we the zombies?"
Yeah, really, that's a good point. It's a very odd. It's like you don't really want this, but you're gonna be sucked into this. You know, you're gonna get zombified. Is that really what Samsung wants to say? I don't know.
Yeah, I think I think they, if they were gonna do a horror movie, they should have done Poltergeist, where like it's the Exorcist saying, "Come here, all are welcome. Walk toward the light. All are welcome. There is peace in the light."
I kind of like this one, and then at the very end, her phone rings. She's got one in her pocket.
Yeah, see. I'm terrified. There's a Samsung product.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Your device is probably pinging my phone and getting my location and sending it to Samsung, whom I don't trust.
Maybe not what they wanted to communicate.
Yeah, again, it's
Samsung's interesting.
Well shot. Yeah, and at least it wasn't. At least it wasn't a. Here's a story of a young girl who fell down a ravine and hit her.
That was a true horror story. Yeah, yeah.
But thankfully, she has an Apple phone.
She has survived.
I'm still thinking about that poor girl. You've got the spooky fog music as you're trucking into the site of the accident.
The worst thing about those was they brought the actual victims back to the scene of the crime. Yeah. So it was like they were re-traumatizing them.
Yeah.
That bothered me more than I hope that
they got more than like a year of Apple Care for free out of this. Yeah. I hope that they got some money.
Apple's TV plus MLS paradise a little bit rocked by the messy debut. It was a live stream. Did you watch it?
I didn't. Not the debut. The press conference
announcement.
Where they unveiled
announcement.
Him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That he was going.
Story is so dumb, Leo. Yeah. This story is so dumb. And if you read it, you get dumber as you read it, because it's like, this is obviously a black eye for Apple. And it's like, you know, so they did a press conference in a pounding rainstorm, and it sounded a little muffled.
For like 28 seconds.
Come on.
So the thing is that they, like, so,
but it's not a damper for the relationship between MLS and Apple.
Oh my God! Yeah, I think they're gonna.
It's not a blow to Apple's attempt to demonstrate it.
In the sense, the rain is making it damper. That's damper.
Okay, well, the guy who wrote it, Malcolm Owen, is Welsh, so I think maybe a little Welsh hyperbole snuck in.
It's a UK content farm kind of story. Look, this is the internet now. You got a nugget of fact, and you got to spin a whole story about it. So you're like, oh, and this is obviously their relationship is now on the rocks, and it questions the whole messy deal. And no, it doesn't. Get over it.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, there was about 30 seconds, 28, 30 seconds of a lot of crowd. Obviously, what they were trying to do was mix the crowd in so you'd feel the energy of the crowd. So they're trying to mix it in. Didn't work because it's raining and there's a whole bunch of mics.
Yes, I see that happen all the time. I remember a Grammy Awards where the mix was so bad I hated the music. I mean, that's
the issue. The
live
issue
broadcasts.
Also, though, is that a lot, it's raining a lot. And it's like, that's like from a live perspective, having a bunch of people walk out with a bunch of mics out in the rain. It's not something that you want to see, and it is something that you're like, oh, this is going to be ugly, and so there was a lot of you know, it's a very difficult stream. As someone who does a lot of this, what they were doing was very difficult to do well. Most people just decide, hey, let's go do it inside, but they already had a stadium full of people to do this with. It's one of the reasons I try to avoid outdoor streams like the plague. So I think that rain is a problem. They were obviously trying to do something with the mix. They very quickly related to it. One of the things we do a lot of times, we do pre-shows, The reason we do pre-shows is so that we can do all this correction before the main person right. comes out. And obviously they didn't have much of a pre-show. They wanted to do a big launch.
Right.
We didn't have all that energy at the beginning. And that's the danger of doing that, is that you have to make that first 30 seconds. But it sounded like the first 30 seconds or 45 seconds, they had it corrected to a reasonably good, given that it was raining, to a reasonably good level. But I think that was, you know, it literally was seconds of stuff. So what Jason said, I looked at it and I was like, oh, I'm always curious what right. happens. So I went and looked at it and I was like, okay, whatever.
you get dumber as you read it, says Jason Snow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, his pull quotes are, it's a blow to Apple's attempts to demonstrate it's a competent broadcaster.
Yeah, okay. Sure it is.
Yeah. And numerous tweets.
Twitter.
Yeah. Right.
There's rejected. The
as soon as you see numerous tweets on anything.
Someone on the internet is angry. Watch out. Someone on the internet is mad.
Yeah.
Look, it's hard out. It's hard out there. Apple Insider did this. Like, we've all seen it.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just a story the other day about how some Hollywood director was taking on a big piece of intellectual property from the past, and that literally the people involved were like, that's not true. It's like, it's tough out there. You get a dollop of something.
Right.
Somebody, it forces you to spin it into a whole big story. It leads you down the path where you're injecting analysis like, this is a blow to Apple's attempts to demonstrate. Like, come on. It's not. But like, I get how hard it is out there writing things on the internet to get the Man, picked up in a search
this
engine.
This is kind of what we were talking about last week with the, you know, the perverse incentives for YouTube right. broadcasters.
Exactly. It rained. It rained.
It was muffled.
In Miami. Who could have foreseen it?
I did get an email from Black Magic complaining about our coverage of the Linus Tech Tips coverage of the Apple marketing misfire. They wanted us to issue a correction. I'm not going to correct Linus's mistake. I want to point out.
So Linus said that Black Magic couldn't replicate their tests. Is that not true?
Yes. It says during the original, this is from a PR person at Black Magic. During the original Linus Tech Tips video, they claimed that Black Magic Design had attempted its own testing and had replicated Linus's results. This is not accurate. In fact, Linus has updated the video and provided a correction in their pinned comments. Ooh. We understand you and your guests did not have the proper context when discussing the video, but it would be possible to edit those sections to remove the misinformation or add a disclaimer. I am going to do what we would normally do, which is correct it a week later and say, I guess Black Magic did not ever do any benchmarking of Apple products.
And that was, in fact, that was the most damning little bit of that entire story, I thought, is that they got a third party who made the tools and they also couldn't replicate Apple's results, which right. made it seem super fishy.
Yep.
And so for them not to say that that's not the case, yikes.
Yeah. So I stand by my initial comments, which is don't believe anything you see on YouTube.
although there has to be at least like a little consideration for how many phone calls, emails, telexes, and whatever went between Black Magic and Apple saying that what the hell?
Why did you talk to this tester
and say you couldn't replicate it? And there could have been like something with a little bit fuzzy. Say we didn't know if we had the right data. Your own like footnotes were a little bit unclear, and there was an agreement that. There was enough fuzziness on it that Black Magic could be convinced to tell Linus Tech Tips that tips that we
are just out here in the far reaches of Sonoma County, but there was such an earthquake at Linus Tech Tips, I feel the ripples, just gentle ripples.
But again, when the source itself like recants, then you absolutely report on it.
Kind of leaves you with anyway. So I just wanted to be fair to Black Magic. Apparently, they not only did they not replicate the results, they didn't even do it. The testing, so or something. I don't know. Like, go watch Linus again. Give him some more hits. He explains it, I guess. All right, little break here as we continue on. Apple losing a big court case in Europe. We'll talk about that in just a bit. But first, a word from our sponsor, the great folks. Well, they really are our sponsors who sponsor the studio. They are the naming rights of the Eastside Studios. ACI Learning. And when we first started doing this, I had to explain, you already know these guys because IT Pro, who's been doing ads with us for 10 years, we're good friends with Tim and Don, the founders, and love these guys. IT Pro has joined ACI Learning, and this is a really good thing for IT Pro users and for all of you who want to get better IT training. IT Pro has, you know, consistently delivered highly entertaining, bingeable video content, training you in all of the aspects of IT. And now, thanks to their partnership with ACI Learning, the number of videos has gone to 7,200 current hours in their on-demand library. They're adding new episodes every day in their studios in Gainesville. ACI Learning is a great partner for this because they provide the best world-class service, assisting you as an individual to choose which learning path suits you best all the way through, helping you find the right career opportunity. For businesses, they will help you design a program to keep your IT team up to speed. If you're an MSP, it's fantastic for MSPs. They have so many great features like their practice labs, which allows you to actually, you know, practice, but in an HTML5 browser. So you don't need Windows Server or Windows clients. You could do it all in your browser on any machine. The self-paced IT training videos with full transcriptions so you can read along as you watch. The certification practice tests, so you could take the test before you take the test. So many people have gone into IT because it's such a great field. I'll give you an example from ACI's website. From Felipe B, he said, he was talking about Wes, who is one of the longtime trainers at IT Pro. Wes is an awesome instructor. Now, Felipe says, I came from a PR background. He was in public relations. He didn't have any IT knowledge, but he decided, I want to get into IT. He says, I've passed my 220-1101 on July 1st on the first try, eager to start 220-1102. He says, Wes manages to explain concepts in a way you understand it very well. That's really what's great about the training you get at ACI Learning. And those practice labs harmlessly practice all what you've learned, but you can even use them to test your own setups and your own configurations. MSPs love it for that reason before you go live with them. They have practice exam questions from Microsoft, CompTIA, EC Council, PMI, many more, which is great because the best way to prepare for an exam is to take some practice exams. It gets you used to the format, the style, and gives you the confidence. Yeah, I know this stuff. That's how Felipe passed that exam on the first try. Every vendor, every skill you need to advance your IT career or your IT team in one place. Microsoft IT training, Cisco training, Linux training, Apple training, security, cloud, and more. You'll get a personal account manager who's with you every step of the way to make sure you're getting just what you need to be successful in your field, whether you're just starting out or you're a longtime pro. You'll learn what you need. IT, you'll pass your search, you'll get your dream job. Learn more about ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness. It's all at the website, go.acilearning.com/twit. And by the way, individuals, 30% off on a standard or premium individual IT Pro membership when you use the offer code TWIT30, TWIT30, at go.acilearning.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of Mac Break Weekly and all the shows we do. The Spanish antitrust watchdog has taken a little bite out of Amazon and Apple to the tune.
No one expects the Spanish antitrust watchdog.
Oh, I'm so glad I gave you that opening. Apple was fined 143 million euros, Amazon 50 million euros. Because, and you know, this is something I guess it's unique to Europe. The two companies signed an agreement in 2018 giving Amazon the status of authorized Apple dealer, and it included some clauses that, according to Spain, affected the online market for electronic devices in Spain. Probably some exclusives, that kind of thing.
Basically, this isn't the first time that that Apple's faced this in court, not even the first time in the EU. Italy also instituted a fine against Apple and Amazon for a little bit less than that a couple of years ago. However, interestingly, both companies fought it, and first it was reduced, and then it was like passed. It was basically wiped off. But there is still a similar lawsuit happening in Washington State as a class action that I think was last month. Like it was filed in like October or September or something like that. Again, colluding, again, assuming, making this the claim that Apple and Amazon basically colluded to keep Apple prices on Amazon at an artificially inflated level. I think they're saying that, hey, this is the prices of Apple stuff went up 10% immediately across the board on Amazon after this happened. The latest action, nothing's happened with it since last month when basically a judge basically said that, hey, Apple and Amazon both wanted to have this case thrown out. The judge said, nope, this case is going forward. So now you get into depositions, you get into disclosure and research. But this isn't new. They're probably going to get it elsewhere too.
The Spanish antitrust watchdog said that this agreement eliminated sellers using Amazon's marketplace to sell Apple devices. 90% right. of the existing retailers were blocked as a result. Honestly, from a consumer point of view, that's a good thing. I want to buy it from Apple, and I want to kind of know it's an Apple authorized reseller. So
yeah, they were having a lot of problems, and they made this deal. But it is, I mean, on another level, it is anti-competitive in the sense that it's crowding the third party sellers off of Amazon, and basically Amazon and Apple made this handshake deal where Amazon gets preferred, but the stuff gets cleared off the store that isn't from the preferred plan. And like, I, as a consumer, I think we even said this on an episode recently. Like, I am more likely to buy a Mac or any other Apple hardware from Amazon now because there was a period
That's
where
right.
it felt super sketchy.
Now you're getting it from an authorized right. Apple reseller.
But I can see the argument that that was also two big companies sort of colluding to push other sellers off the store. I can see that part too, but I do think that it's probably improved the lot of most buyers because they can buy from Amazon with more confidence than there was a dark period where you kind of couldn't do
Apple
that.
Said the agreement was designed to limit the number of counterfeits sold online. You may remember back in October, a similar case in Italy was brought and with a proposed 200 million euro fine, it was eventually dropped. So Apple, of course, and Amazon will appeal this, and who knows what the outcome will be. It's a big fine, $218 million in total. Yeah. But
they'll flick that off the outside. It's like how much made yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's like when you hear about like the nephew of an ambassador in New York who just simply or nephew of a billionaire who just parks wherever they want in New York and just tears up the parking tickets because not only the $100 parking ticket means nothing to them, but like the $800 in fines for not paying it doesn't matter to them. So I don't know whether this is right or wrong, but as usual, I'm glad that at least they have to defend their actions in court because that means that if they're going to be dissuaded from doing sketchy things just in general, if they said, well, we're going to have to talk to a judge and say this was okay, how did we actually structure this deal so that it doesn't do the things that these people are claiming it does?
Yeah. The Supreme Court is also in the news. Speaking of court actions, Apple Reuters says Apple has been chided.
Chided.
It's not as bad as
at least they weren't scolded.
Apple chided by appeals judge as it heads to U.S. Supreme Court in antitrust case, says Reuters. This was yesterday. U.S. Appeals Court judge criticized Apple over legal arguments it made as it prepares to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to strike down the ruling that would require Apple to change how the App Store payment practice works. Judge Milan Smith of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said Apple had made statements in its bid for time to appeal to the Supreme Court that, quote, may not be technically frivolous, but that ignore the factual record and the rulings in the case. Smith did get, and two other judges on the panel did give Apple 90 days to file a petition, pause the ruling on payments through apps. Apple plans to go all the way to the Supreme Court. The Ninth Circuit upheld a judgment that said Apple cannot ban links within apps that direct consumers to payment options outside of the App Store. So you know this because if you have the Kindle app, for instance, or the Audible app, there is no link to push you to the Audible store on the web or the Amazon Kindle book store on the web because Apple forbids that. And why would companies do that? This 30% sales commission. If you buy the book on the web, they don't have to give Apple a third. Fortnite maker Epic Games sued, of course, over this. And this is the one area where Epic won. So Apple doesn't like the Ninth Circuit's ruling, but the Ninth Circuit did give them 90 days to prepare an appeal before they are forced to actually do this. Anything to say about that? I know how you feel, Alex Lindsay.
I think it's
you're chiding Apple as well, are you?
I know. I'm just saying that it's.
You're chiding Epic.
Going through the courts. Yeah. If it going through the courts is the direction. I'm much more comfortable with it going through the courts than having Congress trying to write some law that will most likely miss the target and cause lots of collateral damage. So having it work its way through the court, I think is fine.
The Ninth Circuit really did like Epic's points and not Apple's. The judge wrote, Apple's argument overlooks aspects of the panel's opinions analysis that are inconvenient to its position. Smith said the Epic's role as a games distributor justified a broad-reaching injunction. Smith said competition law injunctions often have incidental benefits to non-parties. That's because antitrust law protects competition, not individual market participants. So Apple seemed to make arguments that, quote, challenge an imagined panel opinion on an imagined record, did not address the Ninth Circuit's opinion, in other words.
Judges, they don't have a great sense of humor the farther up you go up the ladder there.
Yeah. I wonder, the Ninth Circuit, the reason Smith writes that, of course, is that's going to be on the record for the Supreme Court to see. And I think Smith is saying specifically, this appeal is not based on what we said, SCOTUS, and you should see what we said first.
I'm really interested to see how this one fights out. I think that Apple can make arguments, as we all have, about how we shouldn't allow people to sideload apps because there are threats to security from there. It's harder when they say, okay, well, how if you're basically saying we either take 30% of your book sales, your comic book sales, your game sales, or you force people to download and buy it from a website. It's hard for them to argue that, oh my God, the security problems of including a link within the app so you go directly to the store. Like, it's for the customers. We're worried about the customers. That's why we're doing it. I'm really keen to see how Apple defends that part of it. That's all.
I think that the defense will be mostly, it's going to wrap around antitrust and where antitrust, what a monopoly means. I mean, that's where a lot of this comes up into it, which is that Apple is selling about 17% of the global market right now. And less than 50, or very close to 50%. And so it's really whether you define the Apple ecosystem as a monopoly or whether you define it as part of the smartphone ecosystem. So it's really not about, I think that what Apple's going to argue is it's not really about whether they should or should not do that. If they are not defined as a monopoly, they cannot be forced to open up their store. So the whole argument is going to argue is that they're not a monopoly because they don't have a controlling interest of the market. And so I think that that's what Apple's going to push on. And it'll tell us a lot. I mean, the current Supreme Court will tell us a lot about the Supreme Court. If it gets up there and they make a decision, whichever direction they go, it can kind of give everybody a sense of where the Supreme Court stands on that process.
How much risk can you take with this court in place? I think it will, you're right. I think it will swing the needle one way or another.
Yeah.
Saying that.
Tim Sweeney of Epic tweeted his displeasure. That's the place to tweet it. Sadly, Apple's anti-steering rules, that's the anti-steering rules are the things that prevent it from putting a link into the Epic store to buy stuff for Fortnite, which both the district court and the Ninth Circuit court found to be illegal, will remain in place as the Ninth Circuit court stayed the injunction that puts an end to the practice. Justice delayed again, says Tim Sweeney.
It'll be interesting to see if Epic wins. I mean, not by wins, but overall.
This is the only point, right, that Epic won on. Well, they lost on every other point.
But what I mean by this is that in the overall path, did this will either be something that was genius by Epic because They make billions because they finally break down the Great Apple. They make billions of dollars because they don't have to pay 30%. Or it's going to be seen as a Greek level epic failure,
right?
Which, you know, Greek tragedy, epic failure, because epic failure, because the
or to put it in really terms Lionel Messi would understand, a self goal.
Yeah.
It's not the word. It's own goal.
Own goal. Sorry. Okay. I'm not a soccer fan.
This is a blow to your attempts to demonstrate you are a competent broadcaster.
I'm incompetent. Numerous tweets complained. Okay. Go ahead, Alex.
You've been chided for your actions.
I've been chided. You know,
they had a really cushy relationship with Apple that they burned up. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, now that Apple is partnered with Unity, Apple's building a lot of other bits and pieces. Now, if the headset doesn't go anywhere, then it probably doesn't matter. But if the headset turns out to be the next platform that really is big on Apple's side, I don't think that Apple is giving Unreal or Epic any special treatment, you know, and probably the least, it's kind of minimum effort, connection to Epic. And so they may have cut their, because the crazy thing is the Vision platform is exactly what Unreal is built for. And so to be kind of essentially shunted out of it is may have turned out to be a really expensive mistake.
Yep. The actors are out now along with the writers. And that means in about 6 to 8 months, TV's going to suck.
You know, here's the problem. Here's the problem with it is that there's so much in the back catalog for the streamers. The real challenge with this whole strike is that TV will stink, but
Netflix and Prime and all that stuff.
Netflix and Prime and Apple, yeah. We have so many. We're watching so much back catalog.
Finally, a chance to catch up on all those shows you missed.
I just don't think that people will feel it or change their subscription behavior for years before they.
That's interesting.
Well, there's nothing there
because this wasn't the case the last time the writers struck. So
because
that is a big difference, isn't it? Yeah.
And the problem is that the primary people that they're striking against are the ones that can last the longest, and the market that still pays them is the one that can last the least longest. so what they may end up be doing is basically shunting the business into, because what we may just, a lot of people may just stop watching TV and watch streaming because there's nothing new. All there is reality shows on TV, and what there is still all these things that we haven't seen on all these networks. And so that's the thing that I think is going to be really, I think it's a complicated part of the strike. I think that what they're striking about is a very valid and very important subject for them to cover because their business is changing dramatically. And I think that they have to reset that. So I'm not arguing with why they're striking. I'm simply saying that
it's going to be really tough.
This could last through into next, well into next year.
Will not know what happened in Severance for years to come.
potentially. But, you know, it is a big race. My brother was working on a film for a streamer, and they had to submit it before the strike for they had 2 hours left.
Oh, my God.
to get it in. And so they were, it was a close call.
Oppenheimer and Barbie opened today, but the stars of Oppenheimer walked out of the premiere in London a couple of days ago.
Right.
As soon as the strike was called.
At midnight Eastern or whenever they went on strike.
They just
walked out.
Quick glass of champagne and I'm out of here.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, like Alex said, I mean, the truth is you are trying to have two parties do a negotiation for the future of this business when they don't know what the future of the business is.
True.
That's the bottom line.
True.
And like, I get tired when I see these arguments that say, oh, they can't, the unions can't hold the streamers to task right now because the streamers are trying to figure out their business model. And it's like, that's true, but also they can't just mail it in because as the business model has already changed, the things that the union members relied on for their livelihood has already been swept out from under them. So they could come together and come up with a reasonable agreement here. I do kind of wonder if the end game of this is going to be a short agreement because really nobody knows how this is going to go. And in the end, I think the net amount of money in this business is going to be less. It's just going to be less. And that makes everybody want to claw as much of it out as they possibly can. And I totally get that. But the challenge is, like, we don't even know what the gotchas are right now, because we don't know what the final landing place of all of these changes in the streaming industry are going to be. So I do sometimes wonder if they're going to do, this happens in sports, which I'm more familiar with, sports negotiation, is sometimes what you say is, look, okay, we can't agree on a 5-year or a 10-year or a 7-year deal here. Let's do 3 years and come back here then. We'll keep working under, you know, slight changes, and then that's going to expire and we'll both be able to fight over what we want to do. But it's tough, because then you're guaranteeing almost another strike in 3 years.
And the hard part is that for the actors and the writers, as technology moves forward, the producers have less reason to negotiate with them every year. So that, I think that's why they had to do it when they're doing it now. It's because as AI picks up speed, as the global production picks up speed, as all these other things that these companies are working on picks up speed, they just may be able to last a lot longer, you know. And so I think that it's really, you know, it's a really problematic thing. Again, I'm not arguing with the way why they're doing it. I'm just saying that it's a really hard battle for the SAG, AFTRA, and WGA, that it'll be a hard one to win.
And a truth of labor negotiation is, once you get something, you never give it up. And that's the challenge in trying to say, can we do something in the interim and figure this out later, is the SAG and WGA are going to say, we are dying here. We need to make changes now. We can't push this off for 3 years. But the other side is like, yeah, but if I give you something now, you got it forever. And so that's why we're at this. It's scary, because this could be, it's exactly the wrong time for this to happen. 2 years ago would have been great for the writers and the actors. 2 years from now, at least the ground might be a little more settled. But right now, it's the worst possible time for this to happen, I think, for everybody, because nobody, like, there's nothing like negotiating with a company that is not sure even what it will be in a year, right? Like, Disney is a good example of that. Like, are they going to sell off their linear? Are they going to get a strategic partner for ESPN? There's some rumors out there that ESPN might end up being like a joint venture with Apple or Amazon or Google, right? Like, that might actually... Iger is open to that now, but nobody knows. And so, like, it's changed so much in the last 2 years. Would you, if you're an entertainment company, make a deal contingent on what you think it might be in 2 years? You personally, executive, may not even have a job in 2 years. So who knows?
Now, there's an interesting side to note to this. I noticed this morning that there are some independent filmmakers that are going ahead because they're not members of AMPTP. They're not in the process. They have side agreements. Mark Ruffalo tweeted, how about we all jump into indies now? Content creators create a film and TV making system alongside the studio and streaming network, so there's actual competition. So that's kind of interesting. There will be production, but it'll be from independent producers. Maybe this is an opportunity.
Right, and they could potentially sell those
to streamers.
To streamers or whatever, because they would be building it on the outside. And it could happen.
But the problem is that the streamers wouldn't be giving their data or money.
It's true.
They could keep on working. So there's that outside of that, but they're not going to get, and the hard part really is that we're getting, I think that the viewer, even I watch my kids' behavior, even their behavior is that on things that are commercially entities, they really expect a certain level of quality that's really hard to get as an indie. You know, we're now watching lots of movies that have $100 million, $200 million, $300 million budgets. And it's really hard for an indie to do something that feels like it's worth watching. What's really interesting is that kids will go the opposite direction and they want something with no production value on TikTok or on Snap. They want no production value there. But when they start watching TV shows, a lot of times they expect something different.
Yeah. Let's hope
that's all TV has left is production value.
Let's hope. Yeah. Let's hope that it's not just kids that decide what content gets produced, because that's not a good solution.
Well, I mean, oftentimes as they get older, though, you pay a lot of attention to what kids are doing because they move a lot of markets. And so most people.
And that's why those markets we have so many comic book movies in the theaters today.
Although those are, I mean, I think a lot of times people are really looking at those. That market is getting pretty soft.
Good.
You know, like it's
finally.
You know, so they're, you know, they're that.
You guys can go back to reading your poorly printed four color Pulp Fiction magazines and leave the movies to us grown-ups.
I mean, the hard part is that they don't really know why people aren't really going to anything other than tentpole movies at the theater.
Right.
But it's what tentpole movies, like a lot of people are probably going to go to Oppenheimer. Mission Impossible missed its, it made a lot of money.
But it didn't do it? Interesting. How about Dial of Destiny, which has got to be the worst title for a movie I've ever heard.
It also came in soft. It's
Barbie.
It's Barbie and Oppenheimer open today. I've already purchased IMAX 70mm tickets for Oppenheimer. The best seats are already gone, like for weeks, right? The IMAX theater, that center core where you want to sit,
there's 12 seats.
There's only a few really good seats.
If you're gonna pay for parking and popcorn and everything else, there's 12 seats.
Well, you know, I got $2 off because I'm a senior, so there's that.
There you go.
I don't like to sit too close anyway. You want to be center, right? Because the sound is. Mm-hmm.
Which theater are you going to?
The Metreon, the 70mm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're about 5 rows from the top, which is not ideal, but it's center. Mm-hmm. That's better than nothing. I mean, that whole center, the heart of the theater is all bought out for like the whole run. You know, jumped on it.
The good news is that it is a 100 day run, so you can wait for a little while.
Oh, it wasn't the whole run. Okay, I looked only through August,
But it might be the whole run in IMAX, so that might be the case.
Oh yeah, there's a longer run in regular theaters, but the IMAX.
But you can go to Emeryville, which is like the worst parking experience.
But I wanted 70. Ever. Christopher Nolan said I should see it in 70mm.
Oh, there you go.
And I'm going to do what Nolan says.
I'm sure my phone screen is wider than 70mm.
You know, honestly, and I suspect this is what the calculus is. I thought Mission Impossible. Yeah, I'd like to see that in the theater. Dial of Destiny, I could see that at home. I'm sure people do make that calculus. Like, I saw your tweets, Alex. You were disappointed you went to the theater.
I wasn't disappointed. I was just, it was one of those things that I wasn't, I have to admit, what I didn't put in the tweet was the parking process at the Emeryville AMC is so frustrating that I'll never go back. they have an app that doesn't work, and you're sitting there like, I don't care how much it costs, I just don't want to have to spend the next half an hour trying to figure out how to get out of the parking lot. That took a chunk out of my interest in being there. But at the same time, I felt like it was really good. It was fun to watch on a big screen. I did feel like I spent a lot of money on it, and I had just watched
six of them
Impossibles at home. One a day, not like all at one time. I didn't.
Were
like
you sick of Tom Cruise by day 5? But said, "Well, I've started. I got to keep going."
No, I was left with. He's pretty good at what he does. Okay. You know, like he's a good guy.
In the world.
He's got such great running form. You know, like it's got this very, intentional.
Yeah.
It's very intentional.
You know, he's
going to get there.
He's in a hurry and he's not going to flag or fail.
He's really good at it. And he's not like Steven Seagal, which you're like, wow, there's something wrong there. Have you ever watched Tom Cruise run and then watched Steven Seagal run? And it's a completely different experience.
See Steven Seagal run? No. His action stuff is there will be like 2 scenes in the movie where he gets up from the chair he's in and gets into another chair in the same room. That's where he is right now.
No, but I'm saying even if you go back to the original, you know, Above the Law or whatever. Okay.
He runs weird, doesn't he?
Look at him.
That's not good running. That's bad form.
Yeah,
I think probably just, Tom Cruise looked at this and said, "I'm not going to. I'm not going to run like Steven Seagal because his arms are akimbo." Tom, he does the karate chop, and then. But Seagal, no,
yeah.
Anyway, arms akimbo. That's bad.
It was good. It was good. I just found that I was like. It wasn't like I was disappointed with the film experience was better.
Apparently, this is a super cut of Steven Seagal running.
I know.
And now resting.
I'm not the only one that's noticed that the running might be a little.
Here's Tom running. See, he's got his arms. It's the arms. It's all about the arms. They're
he's
pumping.
He's acting.
I'm working hard. I'm getting there. And he had his face is going. Yeah, there's a big difference there.
There's an intentionality there. Yeah.
Look at him run down the side of a building.
Even running down the exactly.
He knows how cool Christopher McQuarrie will make anything he does look, and he's not going to waste that. He's not going to say, "Oh, I can ease off because I'm going to look good no matter what." But if I still give my all, it's going to look like I am freaking Superman. One of the good movies.
I don't. Yeah. Okay. I'm not a Tom Cruise fan.
What I will say is that I think that the Seven was really good. It's better than being at home, but I think that what I was left with is all in all, like all the things added up of driving, parking, paying, doing all those things. It wasn't that the theater experience was not as good as my home experience. It was better than my home experience. It's a great experience. It's just that I'm not sure that it was worth the trouble to get there.
I'm totally with you. I saw Indiana Jones was the first movie I'd seen in a theater since 2019. And it was, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie. But I could imagine that if all I had to do, because I saw it like in the city. So all I had to do was like pay like maybe $4 in public transit fare to get there. I didn't have to park, didn't have to find a parking space. Years and years ago, I had already broken the habit of buying snacks inside the theater. So it really just cost me whatever.
Are you the guy who wears the big overcoat that's loaded with Ike and Mike's and popcorn?
You know,
I got the Ike's and Mike's here.
I'm going to give you a tip. They never check for your hump. Like if you're wearing a hump, they're not going to want to prod it to find out if it's actually like squishy or something like that.
Excuse me, is Dial of Destiny in theater 4?
I'm merely a film lover, just like any of you.
Oh, Andy. Actually, just put in your fedora. You got a roomy fedora. They're not going to take your hat.
I know these summer months, it's pretty stinky. They're not going to look under there either. That's a good tip. I'll try that.
My first movie since 2019 will be Oppenheimer, actually, the first theater experience. But IMAX is you can't duplicate that in your home. I have a very nice home theater setup.
And I'm going to go see Oppenheimer at an IMAX.
I have to see it there. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to join us?
I just have to.
You could sit four rows from the back.
When are you going?
August 12th.
Okay.
That was the first time we could get a good seater, August 11th. It's a Friday at 4:15. I looked at so many seating charts.
The Mission Impossible is all at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, you have to, because otherwise you get
got to find a good seats.
Terrible seats.
Also, I want to be seated away from other people. So I'm still not here for like random crowds in movie theaters who are not masked. I'm not here for that.
Prepare yourself, my friends. Our picks of the week are coming up next. Our show today brought to you by HelloFresh. Oh, I love HelloFresh. Oh, the stuff that comes in that box is so good. Take a bite out of summer with HelloFresh, from chef-crafted seasonal recipes to their new fit and fresh summer menu. HelloFresh brings flavor right to your door. I feel like I'm in the Bear. You know, when that box comes, I go, okay, chef, ready, let's go. Because they have everything is just, it's there. It's ready for you. Pre-portioned ingredients. So you have exactly what you need. No more, no less. So you don't have any food waste. Step-by-step instructions make me feel like a professional. And by the way, these are suitable for framing or laminating or something. They've got great pictures. They show some alternatives that you can use for vegan, or if you don't, you know, there's an ingredient you don't want. The step-by-step makes it so easy. And the ingredients are so good. Make your home the hangout place this summer with crowd-pleasing eats from a backyard bratwurst bar. See? Now that's how to do it. To tangy key lime pie. I love key lime pie. HelloFresh Market makes summer entertaining a cinch. First of all, you're going to get peak time summer produce, and you're going to get it all season long. Their ingredients go from farm to door less than 7 days. That's why it's even better than any store. quality you can really taste and see. It's they're beautiful. HelloFresh offers more than just delicious dinners. It's now easier than ever to add snacks, sides, and more to your weekly order. Lunch, too. And they always have a great curated selection of more than 100 items in their HelloFresh market. So you get your marketing done at the same time. HelloFresh's menu features calorie smart and protein smart lunch and dinner options, plus new vegan dinners to choose from. HelloFresh makes it easy to eat healthy with delicious recipes. They take care of the meal planning. They deliver the ingredients. All you have to do is whip up a delicious meal. And by the way, they have recipes that are ready in 15 minutes or less. So quick, too. You know, nobody wants to cook when they come home, but it's worse to have to go shopping, buy stuff, plan it, and then cook after work. Where you go home and you got your HelloFresh there, you are ready to eat in 15 minutes. And I know these days we're all tempted by that takeout menu, right? But HelloFresh is 25% cheaper than takeout, and it tastes a lot better. Plus, you made it. Makes you feel good. I think you're going to love HelloFresh. 40 different recipes to choose from every week. You'll never get bored. You'll always find something new to try and love. And then once you've made it, you also know how, which is another good side effect of HelloFresh. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Go to HelloFresh.com/MacBreak50 and you'll get 50% off plus free shipping. Use that code MacBreak50 at HelloFresh.com/MacBreak50. You need the code still, though, MacBreak50 for 50% off plus free shipping. Nom, nom, nom. I'm ready. I should have brought some to work. HelloFresh! I got an email. Time for the picks of the week. I got an email from Sebastian DeWitt, who you all know is the guy behind Halide. He says, it's been a while since we updated Spectre, but this is a pretty significant update. Two big changes. Spectre, which I love, by the way, and I do use, it's for long exposure. So it's one of the things the iPhone can't do without a little bit of help. It does stabilizing the shots. It does it over several seconds so you can hand hold it. You can get long exposures up to 9 seconds without a tripod, which is really fantastic. I just love the effects of Spectre. So they made the core Spectre is free now. I've been paying for it for some time, but it's free now. For the free version, you can go up to 3 seconds, which probably for most of the time is sufficient. They're also introducing a one-time purchase $499 Spectre Pro, and that gets up to 30-second exposures, which is I haven't had a chance to use. Spectre.com/download. But I'm going to guess you guys also have used Spectre. It is a really nice app. And of course, Halide is a must-have app as well. But this adds a feature that the iPhone doesn't really have. So it's really nice to have. Spectre, now free with a $499 Spectre Pro. That's my pick of the week. Alex Lindsay, what's yours? Oh, microphone.
So there we go. I've been doing some production with my phone. The phone is really good. The video is really good. The audio is not good. So you're trying to figure out how do I get good audio into the phone. And so one of the things that I've been using is this Saramonic. It's called a Smart Rig Plus DI. They have a bunch of different versions of this. So this is the one that, let's see if we can put it in there. There you go. That's what it looks like. And it has two XLR inputs on Ooh. It as well as a lightning connector.
It looks like a little Zoom.
It's a little like that. It doesn't record, but it does have a 9-volt battery, so you can power your mic. So if you've got a powered mic that you want to, something that needs 48 volts,
okay,
phantom power, you can put it in. You can also set it to either be sending audio in or sending audio out. It's got some, and it also has some 1/8-inch jacks. So if you have like the little mics that are there, so it's in addition to the XLR, you'll see that there's little 1/8-inch jacks up there as well. So anyway, it's pretty simple. It's got a 1/4-20 on the bottom there. So that what's useful about that, of course, you can rig it up. So if you get a rig, I've talked about small rig things for my phone before, you can attach this right to your rig. And we've been using these on and off for years. So this one's been the most stable of the bunch, that we've used. So what it does is it lets you take professional. Now we'll do everything from a professional handheld mic all the way up to like Electrosonic transmitters and receivers. So we can take electrosonic. It seems like a lot, but if you're doing something to Instagram or you're doing something to some of the other platforms, they only let you use your phone. And so you can use your phone, but still get great audio. And we've piped literally mixers worth of audio back into this to get that audio back in. But you can attach it to a rig, and it works really well. So
anyway, and for only $179, you can add a headphone jack to your iPhone.
There you go. That's another added,
another side thing. The only thing I worry about is that it looks like the cable is hardwired into the device, and if Apple abandons Lightning, then this is going to have a short shelf life.
For this one's Lightning, there is a USB-C version of this as well. So you could wait until, if you decide you want to, you could wait with this until the fall and find out if you've got a year worth of it.
Yeah.
But it's great for getting, again, if you're looking for getting professional audio into your iPhone, it's a really useful device.
This is the Saramonic Smart Rig, $179. They do offer, I see. They have Lightning 2-channel. They also have Lightning 1-channel if you wanted to really, you know, just do a Mikey phone or something.
I'd recommend the two.
Might as well. Splurge. Enjoy. Yeah. And they also have a Type-C. So you could use it with your iPad or something like that. Mm-hmm. Mr. Andy Anatko, what's your pick this week? You are muted, my friend.
You sorry. Mine is a mystery. I'm recommending something that I've installed but have not been outside yet to try. It is an XR/ augmented reality game by Google and Taito. Taito, T-A-I-T-O, makers of Space Invaders. It is an augmented reality version of Space Invaders.
What? I gotta have this.
You go outside, and the Space Invaders are in the sky. And like, if you're in a city, they slide in and out between like buildings, and they know like what the lines of the streets are. So it basically follows like the lines of the street.
Does your phone go doom 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 doom?
It's licensed, so it has all the music, has everything.
I want this so bad! Look at that.
That's just the trailer. But I've only run it long enough to realize that you can't use it inside. You have to be outside to make it work. But it's free. There are no in-app purchases. There is like data tracking, but you can opt out of it. Like if you go into settings, like this number 3 on the list, and you opt out of data tracking. So who knows? But it's a nice free thing to play with. This is the sort of like augmented reality that like in 2023, 2024, I'm most keen about. Because, you know, you will look like a dork standing in the middle of the park.
Who cares? You're playing Space Invaders in the parking lot.
But at least you'll be able to see. You're not wearing goggles. You'll see people around you pointing and laughing and shooting like abusive TikTok videos about how stupid you look. So that's a very, very good positive thing. So I'm also not exactly sure. Again, I live in a 350-year-old quaint New England seaside boat colony. I'm not sure if there are enough tall buildings to really sell the effect of these Space Invaders. I intend to find out in about a half an hour. But hey, if you're living in Chicago, New York, San Francisco, I think that will be kind of fun, kind of cool. And you can get it from just the App Store, the Google Play Store, wherever. It just dropped today. There aren't even people who do like game channels on YouTube who have like, oh my god, I gotta have the first review out there. They're not even like first reviews out there. So that's how early this is.
This is so cool. iOS or Android, Space Invaders World Defense. There's also an iPad version, which would be kind of fun to, if you really want to look like a dork. This, to me, this is what AR, this is a better use of AR than slapping something on my forehead. I like this. This looks like fun. Yeah. For now.
You have awareness of the world around you while still having augmented reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a nice demo. It's a nice demo. They teased this at Google I/O in May because they have a new AR kit sort of thing that is like, if you want to build third party apps that integrate AR in the real world environment, not only taking advantage of the camera, but also taking advantage of Google Maps, Street View, 3D data. Here is a way that you can implement into that. So this is clearly a way to celebrate the 45th anniversary of Space Invaders, but also to point out that, we don't have a headset. We have no plans to make one, and we probably would screw it up if we did make one. But it's not as though we haven't been thinking about augmented reality ourselves. Hey, look, free game.
This is so cool. I can't wait to play it. I've installed it. I'm ready. I'm ready to save the world from pixelated 8-bit monsters. And yeah, it says play outside. All right.
Yes.
Thank you, Andy Anatko. Jason Snell, pick of the week.
Yeah, I'm going to pick something that shockingly hasn't been picked since 2010, which is amazing. We actually put this app in the Hall of Fame of our awards for iOS apps at Macworld back in the day. It's the MLB app, which sounds really generic, but I've got various reasons to recommend it again. First off, it is, if you subscribe to MLB TV, you can watch all the games except your local market. There's this footnote there that I'll get to in a second. But I'm a subscriber. I'm very happy I watch it on Apple TV. But you know what? Sometimes I want to watch it on my Mac. And it is the rarest of apps. It's an iPad app that actually works on the Mac. So you actually have the ability to watch the video on your Mac. And I do that a lot. But there's also a pretty... so also a bunch of things are going bankrupt that broadcast... broadcast MLB games.
I know. And isn't that bizarre?
And so the Arizona Diamondbacks are the latest. So if you're in San Diego or in Arizona and in those territories and you want, and you're a cord cutter, you will now be able to just pay Major League Baseball. I think it's like $50 for the rest of the year and use the MLB app and watch all your home games in your local market because they're no longer, they will be on cable, but they're no longer exclusive to cable. You can now actually watch them as a cord cutter, which is pretty awesome. But the timely reason I wanted to mention the MLB app is that they launched a new feature that is now available. It is 3D Game Day. And what it does is it uses all those sensors that have the precise tracking of the pitch and of the players on the field. And rather than just showing you like a little 2D representation of it, they've animated it on the fly. It looks like a video game, except it's actually... what's happening in the game. It's pretty amazing. Mike Petrello from MLB did a tweet about it that I think I'm putting in our show notes. The idea here that you can basically, you're watching a game that looks like a video game, but it's based on all the in-game data and it's happening live. It's pretty cool. My only caveat about it is that when the inning ends, rather than showing them all walk off the field, all the players sort of stand around like zombies and then descend in, and then descend into the ground. That part I don't like. I don't like that so much. Not my favorite. It's like Field of Dreams, but way creepier.
Wow.
But other than that, it's actually a pretty cool idea. And you can see, speaking of AR and VR, the possibilities there as well. What if you could actually like put yourself out in the field of play while, or put yourself at first base when somebody throws a grounder from shortstop at 100 miles an hour to you? It's pretty bananas.
Unfortunately,
I love that they're exploring with
the
this.
Giants are in a rain delay right now, so I can't show you what it looks like. They've just got a batter just standing there. He's just waiting for the rain to go away, I guess. But that's cool.
First time I used it, I was just amazed. Like, this is because they've got all the data, but to somebody was like, we could build a 3D model, we can have generic play. But literally, you see the pitcher wind up and they throw the ball and you see the batter swing. And if it's a ground ball, you'll see the ball go. It's other than that point where they're absorbed back into Mother Earth. That is terrifying.
The longer the losing streak the game is on, the more zombified and decrepit they look. Like, if you look at, if the Pirates are a skeleton with tattered away uniforms draping off your bones.
That would be really funny. So this is where it would be happening in the live box, right?
Yeah, there's the regular 2D game day, and then you get the option to do the 3D game day, and the 3D game day is the one that is like this bizarre augmented
there it is.
Yeah, we've got on the video, there's the Mike Petrello showing an example, and you can fly around and it's all like, again, it looks like a video game, except it's actually what's happening in the game, like, I guess, 10 seconds ago or something.
That's cool.
It's the whole thing. So this is where we are. They've got so much data on that field now that they can basically make a virtual version of the game. And it turns out they haven't sold the rights to that. So you can like, if you're a MLB audio subscriber, you can like listen to the radio while you're watching the computer game version of the game.
Oh, neat. We've come a long way from Ronald Reagan hitting a cup with a pencil and going, it's a long drive to center field. I think I got MLB from T-Mobile, like at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
I forgot that I had it. So good. I'll be trying that 3D.
It's a great app. It's always been one of the best apps on iOS, and they've really put a lot of effort into it, and it's a really well-built app.
It's so state of the art. Like, it's just this incredible app.
Really?
And the
boy, you don't hear Alex say that very often about.
No, it's and the infrastructure that they use to stream all those games,
man,
it is amazing.
Have you been? You've been to the? I went to the BAM, which then Disney bought because they're like, we need to stream things in the future, and they literally just bought Major League Baseball's streaming engine for Disney Plus and Hulu. And it's amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing infrastructure, and it just it is.
Is it in Seattle? It's I think it's where is it?
I've New York City.
New York City. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's Chelsea Market.
Oh, cool.
When you think about it delivers it better than any other app as far as like delivering video to an app. It's really the top notch.
It's good one of these leagues has resolved this, unlike Apple, which really you wonder what their relationship with MLS is going to be.
I know.
Going forward, 20 seconds of muddy audio.
It's okay.
Muddy audio.
Alex Lindsay is at officehours.global. If you go there, you can see what they're up to these days. You can even join in. It's free. It's amazing. You did Photoshop generative imagery today. That looked pretty cool.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I got to say, if you go back to last Thursday, we had the NBC Universal team that works on the Thursday Night Football that goes to Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about HDR, and there's probably 50 people that know what they were talking about.
Wow.
Like that have ever seen what they were talking about. I mean, I don't think they may have talked about it, but it was really, it was super deep. So, anyway, it was pretty amazing. And we've, you know, everything from, business to animation to, you know, we had a lot of great stuff there, but that one you want to check out the objective, color metrics. I mean, these are the folks that are figuring this out for football.
Very
and,
cool.
Really talking about what they're going through, and they're developing new software and new pipelines and new, you know, bits and pieces. It was a pretty incredible hour.
Officehours.global. And if you want to hire the smartest guy in streaming today for your next event, 090.media. Thank you, Alex. Andy Inaka, when are you going to be on GBH next?
Next Thursday at 12:45 Eastern Time. Go to WGBHnews.org to stream it live or later.
Thank you so much. And someday there will be a website at inaco.com.
There will be a website.
I only mention this.
Look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair.
You can now, Andy, you can now just get ChatGPT. Just tell it what you want, and it'll just make you a website.
I just made me think about this anymore.
Yeah, no, there is no ozymandias.com. It's not too late. Maybe you could sign up right now. Jason Snell is at sixcolors.com. If you go to sixcolors.com/Jason, you'll see all the multitudinous things he does. I love this idea. You were talking before the show, and Club Twit members will see it on our Twit Plus feed, about 360 video of a table. Would that be for your like tabletop gaming?
Yeah, we played a D&D session with an Insta360 X3 on the table in the center, and theoretically you'll be able to see when I do this video all of the players and also like the map that's on the table.
That's so cool.
I didn't have a film crew there. It was literally just me, so I set an Insta360 on the table and pressed record.
Nice.
And it actually looks pretty good. So it's we do some fun experiments with stuff like that, and The Incomparable is a place. The story of my career, Leo, which is one of the ways that I enjoy being a tech person and a media person, is I find new tech and I'm like, how could I apply this to what I do? And so I bought an Insta360, and it's kind of fun to do for in-person stuff. So yeah, I'm just experimenting.
I think that's the case with all the people we work with. It's just, we love this stuff, so we buy it and play with it.
Yeah.
And
we tend to be the techier among the crowd of people in whatever media we're in.
Right.
So we're the ones who are like, say, did you know about this 360 camera? And they're like, no, I've never heard of it. And
right.
Like, aha, well, this is it. Right. And then you go.
That's the one I brought to Rome and have some amazing video of Rome. It's really incredible. Yeah. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Alex. Thanks to all our Club Twit members, who, of course, are so important to us. If you're not yet a member of Club Twit, $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of this show and everything we do. And when I say everything we do, you even get shows that are not available in the regular public feeds, things like Hands on Macintosh with Micah Sargent. We just relaunched Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks. There's Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott. There's the Untitled Linux Show, Stacey's Book Club, the Giz Fizz, Ray Maxwell is kind of champing at the bit to bring back Maxwell's House. I think we might do that as well. A great place to hang with other geeks doing exactly what you just talked about, Jason. You know, playing with stuff and using it. And it's so great. We have a Discord as well. It's very active. Always fun to be in our Discord. The Twit Plus feed also has before and after the show stuff. Things like our inside twit that we did, the drunken inside twit we did Friday night with ribs from Aunt, brown liquor from Aunt, and champagne from Lisa. And we were all arranged together. That was fun, wasn't it, John Ashley? We had a good time doing that. And John Slonina wasn't happy, but we did clean up. I think
we cleaned it very nice.
You found no empty bottles, no skeletons, no rib bones, nothing after the fact. All of that on the Twit Plus feed. $7 a month. I think it's worth it. It helped. And you know what? Even if we didn't have all those benefits, you would have the good feeling of knowing you're helping keeping Twit alive on the air and producing new content for you all the time. Twit.tv/ClubTwit. If you're not yet a member, please do us a favor. If you can afford it, of course, only if you can afford it. Don't want to take money that you don't have or lunch out of your mouth. But if you can afford $7 a month, we would sure appreciate it. Twit.tv/ClubTwit. We do this show every Tuesday. We stream it live. If you want to watch us do it live, audio or video, at twit.tv/live. If you are watching live, chat with us live. Our IRC is open to all. You can use your browser. Just point it to irc.twit.tv. Of course, Club Twit members also have that Discord they can join. We have after the fact shows available at the website. twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. There's also a Mac Break Weekly YouTube channel. Best way to get this show, any of the shows we do, is subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. Just search for Twit or Mac Break Weekly and press the subscribe button. It won't cost you a thing and you'll have the show. Thank you everybody for being here. Now it's time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that Twit now has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.